Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Turnover time in Congress this week. Republicans with their own thumping House majority after the midterms, and no movement on unemployment. President Obama took his share of the blame.
Over the last 2 years, we've made progress. But clearly, too many Americans haven't felt that progress yet. And they told us that yesterday. And as president, I take responsibility for that.
GOP Senate leader Mitch McConnell claimed a mandate, a rejection.
The White House has a choice. They can change course, or they can double down on a vision of government that the American people have roundly rejected.
And a lot of Americans just hope for better times. Here's one post-election in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
I think for most of us, the normal people, it's about being up or down and not left and right. With the direction I've seen the country go in the last couple years, I'm not really happy, you know, with what I'm seeing. You know, like, I think we're going downward, not upward.
This hour On Point, our weekly news roundtable with John Harwood of CNBC, Susan Davis of the National Journal, and Jeff Zeleny of the New York Times. Note to our listeners, Jack Beatty's on the road today. He'll be back next week. Susan Davis, Jeff Zeleny, John Harwood, great to have all of you with us. Susan, let me come first to you. There's a lot of talk about compromise and a lot of talk about lines in the sand. Which is it going to be?
I think you're going to see maybe a little bit of both. I think John Boehner, the Republican from Ohio, who's going to be the next Speaker of the House, is given full throat behind sort of changing the way the House operates. And I think stylistically and temperamentally, he is someone that is going to try and seek compromise and be able to move the ball on a certain number of issues. But, you know, Democrats still hold the Senate and they still have the White House. And I think that the lines have been drawn on issues that so starkly on spending, on taxes, that it's going to be hard to see where they're going to find this common ground.
Jeff Zeleny, how do you see Democrats interpreting what just happened and happened to them here?
I think Democrats are fully aware, you know, that this was a rejection of what they've been trying to do, the speed in which they were trying to do it, and also what they did not do. And they realized that, you know, that this is a time for humility. I mean, how could you not be humble after, you know, losing some 60 seats in the House and some 6 seats in the Senate? But Democrats also are now facing the quandary of what is left of the Democratic Party in Congress. A lot of the moderates, a lot of this, you know, so-called blue dog Democrats were defeated on Tuesday. So what the Democratic Party is left with is a more liberal House caucus, you know, and that is almost certainly not what the White House is looking for at this point, you know, to be more liberal. So the internal dynamics of the Democratic situation on the Hill, I think, will be played out by what Nancy Pelosi decides to do, if she decides to try and run for a minority leader, or if she perhaps retires and steps aside. So I think that will be symbolic of what the future for this Democratic Party is in the short term.
We'll come back to look at the Democrats, but Republicans carried the day in a big way in the House to that majority. John Harwood, what about Republicans and Tea Party now and the sort of different threads running through their own, what do you call it, coalition?
Well, sure. It's a substantial coalition. But remember, a lot of this is going to be dependent, the political outcome for both parties, on what happens in the economy over the next couple of years. It is possible that we are at the beginning of an acceleration of economic recovery that will make President Obama look a lot better than he's looking right now 2 years from now. It will also make this House Republican majority look pretty good. And so, you know, there's a lot of circumstantial luck in politics as well as design. There's no doubt that lines are going to get drawn, and the strategic choices for both sides are going to be on what are the areas in which you can cooperate and where are the ones that you want to fight on. And I think that was critical to how President Clinton got healthy after 1994 and ended up cruising to re-election. It's going to be pivotal for President Obama as well. And the Republican Party, has got to figure out whether or not they want to work with the president or continue and try to finish the job in 2012, taking the Senate and taking the White House.
Susan, what's the real agenda you see the Republicans now pursuing? People talk about things on the campaign trail. Sometimes they follow up, sometimes they don't. What's at the top of the GOP House Majorities list, in cooperation, no doubt, with Mitch McConnell in the Senate? What have they got up top?
I think the number one thing that Republicans, both in leadership and in this class that's coming in, is they want to cut spending. But, you know, this is where rubber's going to meet the road for a lot of the campaign promises that we've heard from these candidates, and particularly from candidates supported by the Tea Party. Cutting spending is not going to be easy. If you look at the budget mess that the country's gotten into and what they say they're willing to cut, I mean, if you rule out tax cuts, which they all have certainly done.
Republicans.
And mm-hmm. Republicans, they've said they will not raise
they've ruled
taxes
out taking away the tax cuts, the Bush era. Okay, tax cuts.
They want a permanent extension, but mm-hmm. even beyond the Bush tax cuts, they don't want to raise tax cuts on anyone or raise taxes on anyone. And what they've said that they're willing to cut, they don't want to cut defense. They don't want to cut, so what you're left with is a relatively small pot of money. So when you talk about, you know, you want a balanced budget amendment, but where's the money going to come from? And I think that's going to be one of the toughest equations they're going to have to figure out. And also, you know, a lot of the voters that sent them here have high expectations that they're going to get that done and that they're going to meet realities of how difficult that's going to be. And I think what this election has taught us in some ways is that this really wasn't an affirmation of the Republican Party. I think the people that sent them here in 2010 could be just as willing to throw them back out in 2012 if they can't deliver on some of the things they said they were going to do.
Jeff Zeleny, take us deeper into that Republican turf then. And those strains that may emerge as they have to get real about what the spending actually means. They're promising $100 billion in spending cuts out of the House in I think, the first year. Is there a unified chorus the Republicans can work with there when that starts to turn into, you know, real stuff on the chopping block? Will there be enough on the chopping block to satisfy the Tea Party?
There probably won't be enough on the chopping block, at least realistically, on the chopping block to satisfy some of the demands that will be out there in the electorate. I mean, I think that first of all, the Republican, the new Republican majority or the upcoming Republican majority mm-hmm. in Congress has to organize itself. And they're even having problems doing that, which is not necessarily a surprise. There are always leadership fights, et cetera. But right now, the presumed speaker, John Boehner of Ohio, is facing his first sort of internal conflict from within. Who is going to be in the ranks of the leadership? And these decisions will really help determine what the House will get done, what programs will be on the line to be eliminated, mm-hmm. et cetera. But Michelle Bachmann from Minnesota, she is vying for the number four position in Republican House leadership.
Right.
That's not exactly what John Boehner and the rest of his team had in mind. They want Congressman Jeb Hensarling from Texas to have that position. So even the leadership fights that are going on right now, the elections that will happen, are really going to define what happens in this Congress, the scope and, you know, the realities, as Susan said, you know, where the rubber meets the road here mm-hmm. is going to be determined sort of by who's in charge. So I think they're going to find that the governing, as always, is much more difficult than it seems, you know, when you're out giving a campaign speech on the trail.
John Harwood, we've seen John Boehner just in the last 24 hours kind of dancing on the Michelle Bachmann front, the Tea Party representation on House leadership. How do you expect that to end up? Can they have everybody in that tent, or is it too big a span?
Well, that's going to be one of the dramas that we see play out, is to what degree the Tea Party people keep their boxing gloves on, as Jim DeMint, the conservative senator from South Carolina, urged them the other day. You get people like Rand Paul in the Senate, who has been very critical, for example, of the Federal Reserve. It's somebody who might be expected to take a hard line against an increase in the federal debt limit, even though economic officials in the Obama administration, just as in the Bush administration before them, say that is raising the debt limit is critical to the functioning of the government, the credibility of the government.
Mm-hmm.
Same dynamic is true in the House. I don't think Michelle Bachmann will win that fight. I think you've got Republicans, Boehner's aides lining up behind Jeb Hensarling. Jeb Hensarling's been there. He's likely to win that. But you're going to see those kind of fault lines, either, you know, very vivid or somewhat faded, emerge on a whole range of issues. And as Jeff and Sue both said, the cutting is going to be incredibly difficult. Everyone in the campaign, I talked to a lot of Republican candidates, they sprinted away from Paul Ryan's roadmap for America's future,
right,
which is an intellectually coherent attempt to cut the government, resolve the long-term deficit, but to do so by major changes to Medicare and Social Security. Why did they sprint away from that? Because they're very unpopular. So when if they get to talking about real money, either before the 2012 election or afterwards, that's where they become very politically vulnerable, as George W. Bush found out when he tried to privatize or partially privatize Social Security in 2005. So they really haven't resolved the they've taken advantage of favorable political circumstances over the last 2 years, but they haven't resolved that fundamental challenge of selling those ideas to the American people.
The campaign stake is out there in the middle of the American political field. How that actually plays out, another question, and it will be quite amazing to watch. We've got a lot to look at in the remains of the midterm election storm this week. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a big week in the news. The Democrats shellacking the new Republican House majority, the economy that just barely budges, and what comes next? Let's get our listeners. The voters had a big voice this week. Daryl in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Daryl, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello. I think the electorate are just so absolutely frustrated that we would almost take the communists, if that was a party that would represent the American people as opposed to the corporations that are being represented currently. We've given them so many billions of dollars. I mean, for example, GMAC, we give them billions and billions of dollars, and they've opened call centers up in the Philippines with this money, and it would seem that the Federal Reserve wants them to continue to do this.
So, Daryl, does that put you in the Tea Party or not, or where?
No, I climb telephone poles for a living and really just want some representation in Congress. I don't feel I'm getting it. Everything that I'm purchasing is going up. Every service that I need costs me more. Every day I go to the insurance company, I have to pay more. And for the amount of money these representatives are getting paid, they accomplished nothing for 2 years. And you can hear the frustration that already going forward, they're looking at 2012. So does that mean we have another 4 years at $400,000 times 535 people that are doing absolutely nothing? I mean,
I don't know if it's quite that rich, but I appreciate your call, Daryl, and I think you're speaking for a lot of people. I mean, John, this leaves me, you know, wondering for Americans who just want it fixed. You know, there's Daryl; he'll take anybody who will fix it. Are they going to see that kind of environment in Washington in the next 2 years, or do we get into big ideology here?
Well, there's going to be big ideology, but the question is, you know, what does it take to fix it? Sometimes it fixes itself. That's the nature of a free market economy. And so I talked before about the luck of the cycle. Mm-hmm. If in fact confidence lifts in the business community, and some of the billions and billions of dollars in cash these corporations are sitting on gets plowed into hiring, people like Daryl are going to feel better, whatever the reason, and whether it has anything to do with what people in Congress are doing. But this is a results-oriented business, and if the bottom line is that people's lives aren't getting better, they're going to take it out on the people in Washington. Now, one thing I think is interesting is he talked about aid for corporations. This is one place where you could see President Obama and some Democrats working with some of the Tea Party types on reforming government, reforming the lobbying process, and taking away some corporate subsidies. Those are ways in which the president could put some pressure on Republican leaders and on the corporate support that those leaders have gotten by making common cause with the Tea Party.
Let's listen to just a little bit of what we heard on that front this week. Yes, it's a results-oriented business, but there's also a battle of narratives out there, of ideologies. The president, on the day after, was talking compromise on Wednesday.
No one party will be able to dictate where we go from here, that we must find common ground in order to set in order to make progress on some uncommonly difficult challenges. And I told John Boehner and Mitch McConnell last night, I am very eager to sit down with members of both parties and figure out how we can move forward together.
Eager to sit down and figure it out, but Senate GOP leader Mitch McConnell was sounding a different note yesterday at the Heritage Foundation, really pointing right on to 2012 and the next presidential contest.
We can hope the president will start listening to the electorate after Tuesday's election, but we can't plan on that. And it would be foolish to expect that Republicans will be able to completely reverse the damage Democrats have done as long as a Democrat holds the veto pen.
So, Susan Davis, what about it? Do you see room for some kind of compromise, some kind of work together here, or is it all about maneuvering for position in 2012?
You know, time's going to tell on that one. I do think President Obama has at least made overtures at this point. He called John Boehner the night of the election to congratulate him. He's already set a date to have House and Senate leaders to the White House later this month, and governors as well. But, this week I've talked about 24 of these new members that are coming into Congress, mm-hmm. and I've asked them all the same question. I said, you know, do you think you can work with Obama? And one of the things that they said almost consistently in response was, I think he can work with me. So there is, I think, a mentality in this class coming in that the one that needs to come to the middle more is the president. But at the same time, he's still the president. And I think that there are certain things that, you know, he's not going to be willing to negotiate too far on. So I would say that there is an element of at least precautionary goodwill in this situation. I think John Boehner and Barack Obama are two people that, if they're honest players in this, that they could probably find things to compromise on. They're both relatively reasonable people. It's just a matter of whether their parties and the people they represent are going to let them.
Jeff, is there room, or where do you see potential for compromise? Where do you see lines in the sand here? On taxes, is there room for a compromise? President Obama seemed to be saying the one thing he won't do is promise a perpetual tax break for the richest Americans. Republicans kind of seem to want it.
Well, of course, Republicans want it, you know, and of course, the president says he does not. So, I mean, I think I'm not all that optimistic or looking all that believably towards some type of a compromise on the tax cuts here. I think if there'll be any agreement or any working together, and I do believe there will be, because Republicans certainly have the burden here of doing something. And you know, but I look for some type of agreements and a deal making, if you will, on issues like education, perhaps, or other things. I'm not sure on if a tax cuts will be at the top of the list. But I think back to Senator McConnell for a second. Mm-hmm. I think you know, his speech yesterday was very interesting, but that was not just about President Obama. That was about Senator Mitch McConnell sort of trying to insulate himself from some of his own problems in his conference among Senate Republicans, largely with Senator Jim DeMint of South Carolina, who really emerges from this election cycle very emboldened. And so Senate Republicans have, you know, at once he was trying to lower expectations, mm-hmm. saying, look, you know, Republicans won't be able to solve all these problems that Democrats got us into, you know, never mind that Republicans were in control, you know, for 8 years, at least in the presidency before mm-hmm. before all this. But he was trying to insulate himself from a challenge from his right flank. So I think of all the maneuvering going on here, it's not only about President Obama right now. It's about Republican self-preservation in this new sort of flush era for them. So it's one thing to keep in mind.
Self-preservation. Yes, John, please.
There's one way in which the natural turn of the political agenda could work in favor of compromise on a small scale, and it's this. Mm-hmm. The president was always, having now achieved health care reform, having gotten a stimulus program passed, was always going to turn toward deficit reduction as a theme. Now, you probably can't get a large deficit reduction bargain right now because, A, it would not be good for a weak economy, and B, it involves choices that are too difficult for these two parties to resolve. Mm. However, you could see a consistent emphasis by the president that you could see Republicans joining in on. They would say it's not enough on low-level spending cuts, symbolic program terminations, things, reform of government, things that would allow the administration and Republicans to demonstrate that they're changing Washington and cutting spending. It wouldn't be big dollars, it'd be small dollars, but it might be politically effective, and it might be a start at some of their common goals.
Can you get that $100 billion that Republicans are talking about?
No, absolutely not. Let me take that back. We will see if they can get it. I am very skeptical. That is a very large amount of money to cut from the discretionary budget. And I think economists would tell you that it might not be advisable to do that at this moment.
Mark in Acton, Massachusetts. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. This election proved not that the center cannot hold, but that it doesn't exist. In American politics, the center is a no-man's land where convictions go to die. And the proof of it is, if you look at the electorate, 2008, 45% of the electorate voted for McCain. And that same 45% came out on Tuesday. The difference is that about 8% of Obama voters did not. Their lack of enthusiasm was well documented, and the cause should be obvious. Obama spent 2 years compromising the agenda that got him elected, and Republicans doubled down on the agenda that lost. And it fired up the conservative base, and it depressed the liberal one. And I'm afraid that the president still hasn't learned. On Wednesday, he promised to be even more conciliatory. On Thursday, Mitch McConnell told him to get lost. And whose voters do you think are more fired up here on Friday?
Yes, I hear you, Mark. Susan, how about it? I mean, this president talked conciliation shortly after he got his, quote-unquote, mandate, what many people thought was a mandate, in the presidential election. We saw how that worked out. It was sort of rock-solid opposition on health care and more. What about the president's tone this week? Can he keep that up? And what about the Democrats who are saying, no, turn and, you know, be as fierce as the fierce on the other side?
I think the caller raised a really good point, and it's one that I've been thinking about what this election, the bigger point about it. And he's talking about the center and the middle and these voters. I truly do not believe that Tuesday was about the Republican Party. I don't think that if you look at the disapproval rating, it's almost stunning the victories that they had when you consider almost half of this country has a negative view of the party. I think it was much more a rejection of the Democrats that were in power. And I think Republicans on some level really do understand that. I mean, you know, politics is politics, and people like Mitch McConnell and Barack Obama have to say these things. But when they get to the business of it, I think that Republicans know that they didn't just receive a mandate from the American people. I think they know that, at least on the leadership knows
that. A number
that.
Of them said that explicitly the morning after, or the evening of. Marco Rubio in Florida said that. You quote Robert Hurt in Virginia saying, you know, nobody can look at these numbers and be proud. Those exit polls of disapproval of the winning party, Susan.
But what 2008 showed and what 2010 has showed is a consistent willingness among independent voters that don't align with either party, that they're very volatile and they're very fickle. These same voters that voted for Barack Obama in 2008 by 2-1 margins, the independents, turned right back around and voted for Republicans this time. So I think that is a growing influence in this country, is this independent, this middle, this people that aren't aligned with the political parties who are willing to go back and forth. And I think the party apparatuses on both sides are figuring out how to wrap their arms around this electorate.
So, John, we've talked a little bit about Republican internal politics here, and Jeff's pointed out, you know, Mitch McConnell's language may be guarding his flank against Jim DeMint in South Carolina, his very tough positions. What about inside the Democratic Party? Lots of the more conservative Democrats, moderate Democrats, gone. There's the president. You know, who sets the tone now, and what happens internally with the Democrats, John?
The president sets the tone. Everyone, of course, is going to watch and see if he gets a primary challenge from the left, which I think he will not. I think he's still quite popular, despite the caller we heard earlier. I also think we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that though this was a very, very large defeat for the president, a significant portion of the defeat is baked into the cake. It happens in every midterm election, and you have a fundamentally different electorate that shows up. It's not just that the base was dispirited, it's that midterm elections are decided by older, whiter, more conservative electorates than turned out to vote in 2008. We knew that going in, and like I said, this was an exaggerated form. It's the largest midterm loss we've seen in decades. But the president was going to lose seats anyway, And if you had the when we get into a presidential year, you're going to have a different group of voters deciding the outcome.
But Jeff, isn't there a kind of ideological fight almost inevitable now inside the Democratic Party, or at least how that party ought to present itself? There was dissatisfaction already in the first 20 months of the Obama administration on the left with him sort of tacking toward the center as he moved on his big initiatives. Will that not be more fierce now?
I think it certainly might be. I mean, I think a mark in Massachusetts was just raising the point that you know, President Obama did not, you know, do all that he promised. One of the things that a lot of liberal voters I talked to as I traveled around the country during the midterm election campaign is on health care. They are still very focused and very hung up on, if you will, on the public option, on the health care plan. I mean, it's part – that's one example of something mm-hmm. that just, you know, became a – you know, almost bigger than the issue of health care reform itself. And a lot of liberals think that they have not been served by this administration and this president. You know, it definitely is one of the challenges of the White House message machine, one of the challenges of the White House communications apparatus to try and explain what they've done. I think you could see the frustration in President Obama's eyes and in his voice when he was doing the interview, you know, in the final days of the campaign on The Daily Show. And he, you know, basically express frustration that people don't know exactly all that we've done. Well, it's his burden to explain all that they've done. But inside the Democratic Party, particularly in the House, it's left with a much more a liberal focus, a liberal bent, because a lot of blue dogs, a lot of moderates, and even conservative Democrats were defeated on Tuesday. So I think the one thing that the Democrats have to sort of be wary of in the eyes of the White House is lurching too far to the left. So they have to find a way to, you know, to use an old word, triangulate.
Tom.
John, yes.
There's absolutely no danger that the White House, in my view, is going to lurch to the left. And secondly, those complaints from the left are ridiculous. It is obvious that the president, in both the stimulus fight and in the health care fight, got the absolute maximum that the political marketplace would bear. In fact, he got more than the marketplace would bear, and that was demonstrated in the election results the other night.
But, you know, you've got Paul Krugman just today saying he didn't put up a big enough number for stimulus, he didn't fight hard enough, he didn't frame it in a way that it might have happened. I'm not sure everybody's accepting that view, John.
Paul Krugman has a Nobel Prize in economics, but not in politics.
Yeah.
And the all I would say is that I think the magnitude of this defeat and the fact that so many of those members of Congress saw their friends leave office and now they're going from committee chairmanships to ranking minority members, mm-hmm. I believe that will quiet the complaints from the left and focus the Democratic Party's energy on opposition to Republicans, and that will redound to President Obama's political benefit.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, President John F. Kennedy's indispensable aide and speechwriter Ted Sorensen died at 82. He crafted some of the president's most famous lines. Here's one, and the man behind the scenes.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Working with this one man for 11 years merged our two styles. I knew what he wanted to say. I knew how he wanted to say it.
Ted Sorensen, dead at 82. Thousands descended on the streets of San Francisco to celebrate the Giants' World Series win.
It's 103 days till pitchers and catchers report to spring training.
And at a time when the recording industry is in big trouble, country star Taylor Swift's third album, Speak Now, sold over 1 million copies its first week out. We're looking at a big week in the news, the Democrats shellacking the new Republican House majority, and more with John Harwood of CNBC, Jeff Zeleny of the New York Times, Susan Davis of the National Journal, and Chris in Nashville. You're on the air, Chris.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I'm not very good at these things, but I got fired up when I heard your last caller about how the liberals have just felt abandoned. I mean, we were excited about Obama in 08 about hope and change, and I think what one of your experts has said about those 8% of the people, you know, it's not that they switched parties, it's that they just stayed home this time. I think he's lost a lot of, I think he just lost a lot of that fire that, you know, that he had, and I think liberal, you know, the conservatives have succeeded in creating, liberal is a bad word, and people are afraid to, you know, to be proud of it. I mean, where are the Ted Kennedys that we used to have that, I mean, he was able to get things done and be an unabashed liberal at the same time. I just think, yeah, Obama, you know, obviously he's been conciliatory now, but he would have kept that, those that percentage that, you know, it always seems like there's a 10% sway one way or the other, and he would have kept a lot of those people, I think, if, you know, we had that majority for a while in the Senate, 60-seat majority, and, you know, we still acted apologetic and tiptoeing through the legislation when, you know, and then obviously when I guess it was Scott Brown got elected, we lost our majority, but we, you know, we just lost the fire somewhere, and I just...
Chris, we hear it, and I'm sure there's a passel of Democrats who share that perspective. Susan Davis, what do you say? You hear they're the voice of the Democrats. You know, seems like only yesterday celebrating the big Obama win, and now that sort of voice in the wilderness and wondering what happened, where's the fire?
Well, I think it's clear that the Obama coalition of 2008 didn't do what he wanted them to do on Tuesday. About 29 million people that showed up to vote for Barack Obama didn't show up to vote in the midterms. And that coalition, broadly speaking, consists mainly of minorities, young people, and white-collar, particularly women, white-collar women. And in very few places, I think you could say that coalition held for Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, and it held for Patty Murray out in Washington. But in places like Pennsylvania, Ohio, states with very strong 2012 implications as well, the coalition didn't hold together. So, you know, as soon as we wrap up one election, we're immediately looking at the next. I think that there are a lot of implications in this race for the president in particular and is seeking his reelection bid. And this caller raises a very good example. Will the people that showed up in 2008, how disillusioned is the progressive side of the Democratic Party, and can he get them back?
Here's House Speaker-elect, maybe, John Boehner with ABC yesterday, talking about what the elections meant, who needs to wake up to what.
There seems to be some denial on a part of the president and other Democrat leaders of the message that was sent by the American people. When you have the most historic election in over 60, 70 years, you would think that the other party would understand that the American people have clearly repudiated the policies that they put forward the last 2 years.
Let's go to Phyllis in Omaha, Nebraska. Phyllis, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I'm listening to your program here, mm-hmm. enjoying it, and I'm listening to some of these statements against the Republicans or the Democrats and Obama. And I don't think anybody did anything wrong. I think what this whole election had to do with is the voters making a statement saying that they're very unhappy with the government and things have to change. And that's why we've swung to so far to the left one time and so far to the right another time, that we just need to start listening to the voters and seeing what's going on, because there's been misuse of government funds.
But Phyllis, when voters go left, then voters go right. What's the politician supposed to be listening to exactly here?
They're supposed to be listening to the voters, because that's who's what this thing is all about anyway. Is the people that are the voters are supposed to be the people that pay the bills and do everything. That's why we're here in the first place.
Yeah, I appreciate your call, Phyllis. I mean, John Harwood, a lot of talk from John Boehner and Mitch McConnell about the mandate here. I don't know if they used that word, but that's the idea. There was a repudiation here. I didn't hear as much of that from Republicans after President Obama's big win 2 years ago. Do you think they can hang on to the impulse of this vote more effectively than Democrats did in the first couple of years under Obama?
If the economy stays the way it is, yes, they can. But it's always dangerous to project from the immediate circumstances indefinitely into the future. If the economy gets better, if people are feeling like their job prospects and their wages are improving, then all of a sudden they have a different judgment on what's going on in Washington. I would like to add one postscript to the caller from, I believe, from Nashville, mm-hmm. who talked about how, you know, why can't it be for the president like it was when Ted Kennedy was there in the Congress. Ted Kennedy had a long career. When exactly did he achieve national health care reform? I think the Democratic Party achieved that after President Obama got elected and pushed it through. So some of the frustration, again, from liberals, I think has more to do with their own exaggerated expectations about what is possible than political reality.
Let's go to Marion in Southern Pines, North Carolina. Marion, you're on the air.
Well, the word, the operative word is reality. When are the Republicans going to get the reality that the Democrats do still control the Senate and the White House? And also, you know, where is the substantive plan to, you know, create more jobs? And, you know, I just haven't heard anything from them. And I think when John Boehner broke down in sobs during his press conference, it was because it was reality. Now that I've got this thing, what do I do with it, you know?
Well, okay, maybe, but of course it's a big deal for anybody to be on the path to be Speaker of the House. You know, Susan, John says, well, it's business cycles, and if they're lucky, they're lucky, and if they're not, they're not. But that doesn't make much of a campaign platform, does it?
No. I mean, I we're talking about spending and all these things. I think a lot of the anger, and a lot of times we see Washington has been reluctant to do some of these tough decisions, is because a lot of these Tea Party voters, a lot of these people that voted them in there, if they're going to accomplish this is the thing that the electorate and voters need to realize. We can't really get there unless almost all of us feel a little bit of pain. And I don't think as a politician you never want to take a vote that's going to make you immediately unpopular. It's easy to say, I'm going to cut the budget, I'm going to do this. But what does it mean? And a colleague of mine this week put some sort of numbers on it just to give people an idea of it. And it was really interesting to me because he said, you know, here's an example of what a 20% budget cut across the board of these agencies mean. It means eliminating 3,000 FBI agents. It means cutting 200,000 children out of the Head Start program. It means a complete shutdown of NASA. If you're a politician and you actually are going to attempt to do that, I think a lot of these people that voted them in there would say, but wait a minute, and turn around and vote them right back out. There are no easy decisions to be made to really solve this problem.
Laying off FBI agents, it's not exactly what the Republicans were talking about first thing this week. Here's Eric Cantor of Virginia, of course, talking about jobs and fiscal responsibility.
The first order of business has got to be create jobs. And that means cut spending and get us back to an era in which we can promote opportunity, people are ready to step up and accept responsibility, so we can promote and reward success.
Jeff Szalony, is there room for the president to do a Bill Clinton-style triangulation into this reality that he's now looking at, the vote reality on Capitol Hill? I mean, you know, 2010 is not exactly the same as 1994 was economically, not exactly the same politically. Can President Obama do a Bill Clinton 2 here?
I wouldn't necessarily look for President Obama or for this White House to do, to follow the playbook of what Bill Clinton did in the days after the 1994 Republican sweep. And there are several differences. One, Democrats control the Senate, and the margin of victory in the House was larger. There were some 60 seats this year compared to 52 in 1994. So, you know, a little bit of a bigger shellacking this time than in 1994. But many things are different. I think one thing to also keep in mind, I think this president is much different. He is not expected, or I do not expect him to, and I've been watching him for a long time since his days as a state senator in Illinois. He is not going to fire a lot of his internal advisors. He's not going to sort of do something very abrupt or very quick. I think we saw him with sort of an air of humility about him, and I think he will approach this in sort of a methodical way. I do think that he's serious about reaching out to Republican leaders in the House and trying to have an improved dialogue, because that's it's good business. It's good politics for him. It's, you know, if they decide to meet him, you know, halfway on a couple small things, I think it's good business for them as well. But I do not expect this to be a full bore 1994 Bill Clinton, approacher. I just think there are many, many different circumstances. And the economy is the biggest one. If the economy improves, which Republicans and Democrats both have, a burden to try and do that, I think this president emerges in a much stronger position.
John,
guys, let's don't forget one thing about Bill Clinton's political resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
The most important thing that happened that he had some control of, aside from Oklahoma City, was the government shutdown with the Republicans. They overreached. He beat them. So that involved drawing lines, not conciliation. The welfare reform deal he struck with them in 1996 was after that had happened, after he had defeated them on the government shutdown. So part of it is reaching out. Part of it is finding consensus on things without too much political cost to the president and that Republican leaders can strike a deal on. But also it will involve where he and where Republican leaders decide to fight and draw lines and who wins those fights.
Let's go to Stark in Fisherville, Virginia. Stark, you're on the air.
Thank you very much. Enjoy your show very much.
Thanks, Stark.
Three little points. Rand Paul will not be an issue in the Senate. He's too radical for either side and will vote against everything. McConnell has already stated before the election that his main objective for this four-year period was to see that Obama was a one-term president. So if you're looking for any compromise working together, I can't see it coming from Mitch McConnell. The only good news I heard from the day of the election was the new senator from Florida stating that it was everybody's problem and we need to work on it. That's all I got.
Got it. Thank you. Thank you, Stark. Susan, what about the Tea Party's actual effect here? I mean, Stark doesn't expect much from Rand Paul. On the other hand, he's got a megaphone. He's in the same boat as Marco Rubio, Tea Party-wise, and Rubio sounded pretty savvy after the vote. And they've got Sarah Palin up in Alaska claiming, big momentum out of this election. What do you make of that?
I think Rand Paul's probably the best example of a Tea Party candidate in the 2010 cycle. I mean, he's truly someone that only in this year could probably have won the Senate race. I think there's a big difference between the Rand Pauls and the Marco Rubios. I know that Marco Rubio had support of Tea Party locally in Florida, but Marco Rubio has also been an elected official for the majority of his life. He was a lobbyist. I mean, he's much more politically astute to the ways of elective office than someone like Rand Paul, who is a doctor and has never held it before. He's probably right when he says that Rand Paul's not coming to the Senate to compromise. I think he is probably going to strike a path similar to Jim DeMint and draw very sharp lines on what, especially when it comes to spending and taxes. But there is an interesting part about the Tea Party and what happened on Tuesday. There are some in the Republican Party who say that the Tea Party, at least in the Senate, was actually it hurt them this year. That Tea Party candidates, you look at Sharon Angle in Nevada is a good example, that she won a primary over a more establishment candidate who may have had a better chance to beat Harry Reid in that race. So there's a couple places that people point to that say, hey, if we would have actually had more traditional candidates, we could be a lot closer to a Senate majority. So there was also some drawbacks to what the Tea Party's effect had for Republicans this cycle.
John, where do you see this election on the Republican side leaving the sort of presidential candidates in waiting? What about Sarah Palin? What about the rest of the potential field?
Sarah Palin was strengthened by the election. I think you have got some governors who are rising on the potential presidential list, including Haley Barbour, including Mitch Daniels in Indiana. I think that field is wide open. It's not especially strong. There's no dominant player. And it's going to have a lot to do with the public face and identity of the Republican Party over the next couple of years.
And if the Tea Party effect this time was to get people to lean right, and yes, they had some high-profile losses in Angle and O'Donnell, but they also had some victories. I mean, are Republicans going to be looking over the shoulder to the right all the time? Doesn't that make compromise with President Obama more difficult, John?
Yes, it does make compromise more difficult, and it also, I do think the lessons of Christine O'Donnell, Sharon Angle, Joe Miller, all cases in which potentially you had seats that were fumbled away, I guess not in Miller's case because Lisa Murkowski's likely to win, because of candidates too far to the right. I think that Republican primary voters are going to remember those lessons when they vote in 2012. That will probably have an influence on them to be somewhat more pragmatic in their choice.
Jeff Salini, we just got a few seconds left here. Sarah Palin, can you see her at the top of the ticket in 2012 for the GOP?
It's hard to see it at this point right now, but that's not to say that she, if she decides to run, that she could not have a very major influence in the Republican nominating process. Look for her to embrace some type of a draft Sarah Palin movement, but she has many, many months to make that decision.
Well, the biggest shift since 1938, and off we go. Thanks to each of you for being with us today. Jeff Salini with the New York Times national political correspondent there. Jeff, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
John Harwood at CNBC, a political writer as well for the New York Times. Happy birthday today, John, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
And Susan Davis at the National Journal. Thanks, Susan. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.